There's a culture war going on in this country. We can no longer remain silent on the issues that affect us all. Decisions we make now will determine our future. But how do we engage with the culture in a way that honors Jesus? How do we rise above the noise to know what is right and what is true? It's time to bring God back into the conversation. It's time to reconnect. Here's Carmen.
Welcome, friends. I'm Carmen LaBurge. This is The Reconnect. We're here to speak the truth on the real issues of the day in real time. So how do we do that? How do we get God back into the conversations of the day? How do we enter into those conversations as the ambassadors of Jesus Christ? And how do we speak the mind of Christ on the matters of the day, not just in ways that maybe promote ourselves, but in ways that honor Jesus? Because let's face it, people don't need just another piece of our mind, another opinion piece. What they need is the very peace of the mind of Christ. Now, how are we going to give that to them? Well, we have posted resources for you online at reconnectwithcarmen.com. While you're there, sign up for our email newsletter. You can also like The Reconnect on Facebook, and you can let us know what you're thinking about on Twitter. I'm at Carmen LaBurge. Now, if you want to be a part of the launch team for my forthcoming book, Speak the Truth, please go to the Facebook page for The Reconnect, or go to Twitter. Again, I'm at Carmen LaBurge. Or go to reconnectwithcarmen.com and let us know, hey, I want to be on the launch team. I want to be a person who, via my social media, my platform, and my relationships, gets the word out about Speak the Truth, how to bring God back into every conversation. So the book launch is actually Monday, so there's still time to join the team. All right, friends, I want to open today with a thank you to Senator Bob Corker and others on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and to every one of you listening right now who communicated your concern for the unanimous passage of H.R. 390. You'll remember that is the Iraq and Syria Genocide Emergency Relief and Accountability Act. We had conversations here on The Reconnect with former Congressman Frank Wolf, as well as Tom Farr. This is a subject matter that you and I have been talking about, not only the concern and issues related to genocide, but the particular experiences of Christians and other religious minorities in those parts of the world where ISIS has been not only overrunning cities and towns, but then driving out the Christian populations. And so in order for Christians and other religious minorities to return to those towns from which they fled because of religious persecution, in order for them to return, they need assistance in doing that. It's one thing for us to declare that a genocide is taking place. It's another thing for us to actually activate the kind of emergency relief that is required to enable people to return to their communities and rebuild their homes, rebuild the infrastructure, and then actually rebuild their physical homes and move back in. So we've talked about it here on the program. We were concerned that H.R. 390 was stuck in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. We want to absolutely celebrate today that it is now unstuck, that it passed the Senate Foreign Relations Committee unanimously. We've also received the reports that Chairman Bob Corker, Republican from Tennessee, is going to now hotline the bill to the Senate floor. That would be great. This would expedite its movement back to the House, which also voted on it unanimously, for a vote that then could be on the president's desk for approval. You'll remember there's just a really short window of time for this to happen in a way that would actually be useful. So if this languishes for too long, another 30 or another 60 days, God forbid, the help is just going to come too late. And so we want to now encourage you to tell your senator to pass H.R. 390, which is the Iraq and Syria Genocide Emergency Relief and Accountability Act of 2017. And if you go to reconnectwithcarmen.com, I have information posted there on how you can find your senator, how you can contact Senate leadership with power to move the legislation, and also a link to the petition hosted by persecution.org that you can add your name to the thousands of others who are already speaking out on this issue. So again, we're saying thank you to Senator Bob Corker and others on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And we're saying please to Senator Majority Leader Mitch McConnell to quickly move the bill to the Senate floor for passage. All right, friends, here's my encouragement. When you and I exercise our First Amendment right to free speech by, speaking out on issues like this, when we petition the government, when we assemble ourselves together for collective action, even via social media, when we utilize the press, all of it in advocacy for the religious liberty of others, we're actually being we the people. as conceived of in the Constitution of the United States. So I want you to celebrate when you actually have the opportunity to be an influencer in the culture today and move the needle on something as important as the liberty and freedom that our Christian brothers and sisters are experiencing around the world. So I just want to lead off with that today. All right, now I would like to move to a conversation about bullying. And I want to enter into that conversation by sharing with you some of what Melania Trump, our first lady, had to say yesterday at a luncheon at the UN. Now, first of all, she is a lovely hostess for a luncheon. Any one of us would go to a luncheon that she was hosting, no question about it. But I will admit to you that it takes a moment to sort of attune your ears to her accent. So do not grow impatient with yourself as we listen to these comments from the First Lady.
When we join together as parents, caring for children, whatever they live in our own families across the street, across the nation, or across the globe, we claim our responsibility to the next generation to ensure they are prepared to accept the torch of leadership for the world of tomorrow. And make no mistake, this will always begin with us coming together to embrace parenthood's noble calling. Nothing could be more urgent nor worthy a cause than preparing future generations for the adulthood with true moral clarity and responsibility. To achieve this, we must come together for the good of our children, because through them, our future will be defined.
Okay, friends, I want you to note what she said in there and how profound a statement of worldview that is. The First Lady is encouraging everyone to embrace parenthood's noble calling. There are a lot of folks who don't regard the having of children or the raising of children as their particular calling, and certainly not as a noble calling. They just view it as something that that you do as a part of the process, and that there's nothing particularly special about those little rugrats. Well, actually, there is. And when she talks about preparing them with true moral clarity and for responsibility as adults, that is her particular worldview in terms of the responsibility that parents have, not to just sort of put up with kids, but to actually raise them up. She led off her speech with this paragraph: "The most important and joyous role I've ever had is to be a mother to my young son. What could possibly be a more essential focus in anyone's life than that of loving, educating, and bringing up the next generation to be happy, productive, and morally responsible adults?" That's a good question. That is a really good question. What could possibly be a more essential focus in anyone's life than that of loving, educating, and bringing up the next generation to be happy, productive, and morally responsible adults? That's a worldview statement. And that's a worldview statement that runs contrary to the cultural narrative that says that the greatest thing you'll ever do is not something that is related to having a child. And so I want you to recognize the dignity of motherhood that our First Lady is announcing to the world in what she's doing. Now, she has she actually revealed yesterday what the focus what her focus is going to be as First Lady. And so let's listen to the next clip.
"Therefore, we must teach each child the values of empathy and communication that are at the core of the kindness, mindfulness, integrity, and leadership, which can only be taught by example. By our own example, we must teach children to be good stewards of the world they will inherit. We must remember that they are watching and listening, so we must never miss an opportunity to teach life's many ethical lessons along the way. As adults, we are not merely responsible, we are accountable. I hope you will join me in recommitting ourselves to teaching the next generation to live by and honor the golden rule, to unto others as you would have them unto you, which is my paramount in today's society. And I'm focused as First Lady.
Okay, her focus as First Lady, if you could hear and understand her there, is that that we would teach the next generation to live by and honor the golden rule, to do unto others as we would have them do unto us. If that's going to be her focus as First Lady, and if she's inviting us into that, then let us indeed commit ourselves to joining her in that most noble of callings. So if you recognize in there what Melania Trump has said, that we should never miss an opportunity to teach life's many ethical lessons along the way, I'm wondering if when she says that, you are actually hearing an echo of the Shema. You're actually hearing an echo of what God says to the Jews about how they are supposed to be sharing with their children when they get up and when they lie down and when they are going to and fro and when they're coming in and out of the house and on the way. And okay, so this notion that all of this happens in the course of everyday life, as we are living in the midst of the reality of the world, that we are never as adults to miss an opportunity to teach life's many ethical lessons to children. So there's a couple of ethical lessons I don't want us to miss today. I want you to note that she raises up the values of empathy and communication, and she views those as being at the core of kindness, mindfulness, integrity, and leadership. If you were looking for a values clarification course, Melania Trump has given you one in about 1 minute. So we're going to talk about the values of empathy, and we're going to talk about how those values are learned. And then we are going to enter into a conversation that is, frankly, pretty distressing about the state of things in the United States of America in terms of how children are treating one another. So when the First Lady began addressing issues, she actually lifted up a litany of concerns related to children: drug addiction, bullying, poverty, disease, trafficking, illiteracy, hunger, and the reality that it's often the children in any culture who are hit first and hardest by any of these. So we are going to talk after the break about human trafficking. And so let me just tell you that in advance. Not because I think that it is something that's inappropriate for children to hear, but because I want you as parents to have the opportunity to make a decision about whether or not your children hear that particular conversation at this stage of life. So in the second half, Raleigh Sadler, founder and executive director of Let My People Go, is going to join me for a conversation about human trafficking. But right now, the conversation that I want to have is about bullying. And this is a conversation that frankly is fit for ears of every age, because actually what we're going to try to do together right now is to put this conversation about how children are treating one another right in the forefront of our hearts and minds. Let me read you a Facebook post from a dad in Amman, Idaho. His name is Dan Bazant. Dan Bazant says, "My heart is in pieces right now. My soul feels like it's ripping from my chest. This beautiful young man, my son Jackson, has to endure a constant barrage of derogatory comments and ignorance like I've never witnessed. He is called ugly and freak and monster on a daily basis by his peers at school. He talks about suicide. He's not quite 8. He says he has no friends and everyone hates him. Kids throw rocks at him and push him, shouting horrific words. Please, please take a minute and imagine if this were your child. Take a minute to educate your children about special needs. Talk to them about compassion and love for their fellow man. His condition is called Treacher Collins. Maybe even look it up. He's endured horrific surgery. He'll have several more in the coming years. Anyway, I could go on, but please educate your children. Please share this. This shouldn't be happening to anyone." I want you to imagine for a moment that you are the father of a special needs child. I want you to imagine that that child is bullied every day relentlessly, to the point that he wants to wear a mask over his face, and he wants to kill himself. Okay, this is the status of culture in the United States of America. Friends, this is not okay. And children are learning this from their parents. And so every parent who's listening right now, I want you to commit. Actually, you don't have to be a parent. Every adult who's listening right now, I want you to commit yourself to aligning yourself with this dad and with parents like him of special needs kids. Kids who look different, but are in their heart of hearts exactly the same as all those quote-unquote perfect kids out there who look exactly like the world says they're supposed to look. Now, that's a special needs child in Idaho. Here's a biracial child in New Hampshire. Scores of people gathered at a city park Tuesday evening, this is now 2 weeks ago, to support the family of an 8-year-old biracial boy who, according to his family, was taunted by a group of young teenagers with racial slurs who hanged him with a rope around his neck. For more than an hour, now it's talking about the response and people gathered to pray and to raise concern. But this hanging incident only became public after family members shared photos of the boy's neck on Facebook. Okay, so we have a special needs child in Idaho who is experiencing relentless bullying. We have a biracial child who is experiencing nothing short of bullying is probably the misdemeanor here. This is an all-out hate crime. And then we have this, in case you're saying to yourself, well, bullying only happens to boys. Here we've got an 8-year-old girl who has been bullied for her love of bugs. Now this story has a happy ending, and so I want to share it with you as well. It's tough being different, especially when you're an 8-year-old girl who absolutely loves bugs and brings them to school as friends. So Sophie Spencer's fascination with insects didn't go down well as with her peers, until that is a crowd of professional entomologists stepped in to support her. Now she has become the proud junior author of a paper printed in a scientific journal. So, proactive parents in all three of these cases, by the way. Mr. Bazant took to Facebook, and this family in New Hampshire took to Facebook, and this family of Sophie took to Facebook as well. The proactive mom posted that her daughter was being bullied at school, and the good folks at this professional entomologist organization actually responded by sharing the email on their Twitter account with a new hashtag bugs are for girls, and inviting entomologists to connect directly with Sophie. And that's what happened. So Sophie then became not only encouraged by these adult mentors, but because they sent her a microscope, which she then took to school, other kids began calling out to her. Instead of calling her names, like Bug Girl, they would call out to her and say, Sophie, Sophie, we found a bug. Can we look at it under your microscope? And so she's been equipped and empowered to actually embrace her calling as a future entomologist. Here's my question to each and every one of us today. How can we better engage? How can we more effectively engage the conversation of bullying? Because obviously, in each one of these cases, these kids are 7 and 8 years old. The experiences that they're having now are forming their view of the world. And I don't want any child to have such a deformed view of the world as the other children are provoking these little children to have. People, we know better. We know better than to treat people the way these children are treating their peers. We know better than to call people freak and monster. So why do these children not know better? Well, they don't know better because they're not being taught better. Well, who's not teaching them better? Who is failing here? The answer to that question is everyone. Everyone. If you and I don't know how to talk with a special needs adult, how are our kids going to ever learn how to talk with a special needs child? If you and I aren't actually becoming students of the things that are challenging young people today, How are our kids ever going to cultivate the kind of empathy or ability to communicate that Melania Trump is advocating in her speech? We know better, so why don't we act better? We know better, so why don't we teach better? We know better. Why do we treat other people as anything less than fellow image bearers of the living God? Regardless of their, racial formulation, regardless of their physical formation, regardless of their particular interest in bugs, why do we treat people as anything less than fellow image bearers of the living God? My answer to that question is this. I think our life ethic is too small. I think we have failed to recognize that when God creates humanity, and when God redeems humanity, and when God populates a kingdom for himself, the kingdom of heaven, he does so with the widest diversity of people you and I could ever begin to imagine. And yet somehow we have imagined that everybody who's going to be there is going to be just like us. Now, the way in which they're going to be just like us, where everybody in the kingdom of heaven is going to be just exactly the same, is that we will all be image bearers of the living God, redeemed in Jesus Christ, unified as the one body of his people, whom he is claiming unto himself in heaven forever. That's how we're going to all be the same. We're going to all be redeemed in Jesus Christ. Yes, from our deformities. Yes, from the things that currently separate us. In Jesus Christ, every dividing wall of hostility has been brought down. That's the promise of the book of Ephesians. Hey, if you need a book, we just talked to Trillia Neubel. Amanda, can you grab me the title of Trillia's book since I don't have it right in front of me? God's Very Good Idea. We just talked to Trillia here on the show a couple of days ago. And Trillia's got a book that if you're saying to yourself, I need help. I don't know how to talk about kids who are different. I don't know how to help my kid not be a bully. I don't know how to equip my kid to talk with other kids about not being a bully. So God's got a very good idea, a very big idea. Trillia Neubel has written a children's book on this subject. And so it's not an anti-bullying book, but in a way it is. And so I just want us to all become anti-bullies. And in order to do that, maybe we've got to get the conversation down to the level where we can all understand what we're talking about as fellow image bearers of the Lord our God, and what it means to be members of the household of faith together. So I want to reach out to this family in Idaho, and I want to reach out to this family in New Hampshire, and I want to reach out to Sophie's family, and I want to say to each and every one of them, your child is precious, and you as their parents are not alone. There are other adults out here across the United States of America, across North America, who love your kid. And we're ashamed that your kid is experiencing what they're experiencing in the context of their peer relationships, either in your neighborhood or in our schools. Each and every one of us is going to have to become proactive on this subject. Each and every one of us is going to have to get on the anti-bullying Melania Trump train. All right? You've been looking for a Trump train to get on? Here's one you can get on. I don't care what your political affiliation is. You can get on the Melania Trump train today and become an anti-bullying person. You can become a pro-golden rule person. You've been looking for a seat on the Trump train? Here it is. All right? So I don't know how I can encourage this in a way that is any stronger. Melania Trump is concerned about the moral conscience of our country. She's concerned about our moral integrity. And so let me just encourage you to get on board with the First Lady today and join her in this effort to have us live by and honor the golden rule. Hey, when we come back, we're going to talk about this conversation as applied to human trafficking. This is The Reconnect with Reconnect with Carmen. We'll be right back. I was made. Welcome back. This is the Reconnect. I'm Carmen LaBerge. We're making an effort to get God back into every conversation, including the conversations that we are having in the culture and around the world. So we're talking about what people are talking about, and sometimes we're talking about the stuff that people are not talking about, but people need to be talking about. So we are seeking to equip you to be an ambassador of the kingdom of God in the midst of the kingdoms of this world. Please visit us at reconnectwithcarmen.com. You can like us on Facebook. You can always let me know what you're thinking about. I'm on Twitter at Carmen LaBerge. All right, friends, as I let you know at the outset of the hour, we're going to be talking now with Raleigh Sadler, and we're going to be talking about the issue of human trafficking. So if you have little ears in the car, I'm not suggesting that this is a subject matter that's inappropriate for them, but I want you as the parent to be able to make that call. So if this is something you want to listen to later via podcast, you can always go to reconnectwithcarmen.com and get today's show and every other show we've ever done. So that's just to give you a little bit of time to make that decision as we move into this very sensitive conversation. Hey, Raleigh Sadler is the founder and executive director of Let My People Go. You can find all of the information that we're going to talk about today at LMP, that's for Let My People, LMPG, Let My People Go, network.org. So LMPGnetwork.org. Raleigh, welcome to the Reconnect.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so let's just start with the biggest sort of the biggest question that I can probably ask on this subject.
Okay.
What exactly is human trafficking, and what is the scope of it? What does it include?
So one of the things that is daunting about human trafficking is defining it, because if you read the UN definition, you can almost get lost in it because it is so long. And we look at human trafficking and we try to simplify it to show that this complex issue is basically the exploitation of vulnerability for commercial gain. People with power exploit those without power, those who are emotionally insecure, psychologically insecure, financially insecure. These people are often, they're often forced or tricked or coerced into doing things that they would never want to do in the first place. And that's really the means of human trafficking. A trafficker will often, whether it's a young girl who's been tricked by her boyfriend to sell her body, or it's an older man who has been coerced into working in a grove picking oranges. Oftentimes, traffickers use these two tools. They use fraud and coercion, but to keep people in areas of exploitation, they will use force. And so when you think about it, there are as many as 46 million people around the world who are held in situations that are similar to this. Maybe a person working in a brick kiln in India, or someone who's in a construction site in Toledo, Ohio. And really, we have to realize that people can be trafficked anywhere, because vulnerable people are everywhere. And cases have been reported in every country and every state.
Yeah, and I want to, that's specifically then the next part of the conversation that I think we absolutely have to have. Because I think that people live, they live with the false assumption that human trafficking, which we're defining as the exploitation of vulnerable people for financial gain, that people assume that human trafficking is something that only happens in other places. But you and I both know that because of the global nature of the economy and the realities of poverty and desperation, neglect and abuse, human trafficking is happening right here in the United States of America in our own communities. So I want you to strip away the veneer that some of us might have. Strip away the veneer and just show us the reality of the prevalence of human trafficking right here in America.
I often get the question, well, if human trafficking is so prevalent, then where are all the victims? And I generally take a moment and then calmly respond, they're hidden in plain sight right behind your assumptions. Because at the end of the day, we have in our mind's eye this picture of what we think human trafficking is, the girl chained to the radiator, or the person far off in Southeast Asia or South Asia, where over half the reported cases of human trafficking actually happen. Or maybe we're picturing something we saw through the media or through a movie we watched. Like, I mean, I can't tell you how many people I've talked to who said, are like all the victims of human trafficking, are they kidnapped? And I'm like, you've seen Taken, haven't you? And they're like, yes. And I'm like, well, here's the thing. No, I would say a relatively low percentage are kidnapped, but many are tricked. Many are coerced. And it's generally people who don't really have a leg to stand on. They're susceptible to trafficking because they don't have a structure that's looking out for them. They don't have people in their corner. They don't have the resources through which to protect themselves. They're very much the widow, the orphan, and the sojourner, the least of these, as we would see in Scripture. And what I've found is the reason that we don't see potential victims of human trafficking is because we've already labeled them. We've already labeled them as perpetrators. We see someone who's homeless who could very well be exploited, and we say, that person's a bum. He just has no work ethic. We see a girl on the corner who's stuck in prostitution, and we say, only if she would have stayed in school. And we don't want to be anywhere near her because that girl could actually hurt our church.
I want to give you a story of hope that I just heard today. And it did not occur to me until you just said what you said, that what my friend is doing is preventing the trafficking of another person. So I have a friend who she and her husband are welcoming into their home a young woman who is pregnant with her third child, and her two-year-old and her seven-month-old. That's a lot of little kids for one young woman who does not yet have her GED, but who wants to get her GED and wants to work, but has no, as you've described, no supportive system can provide her the window of opportunity that's necessary to do that. And so It didn't occur to me until you just said the way you just described, and I'm like, okay, that's really what my friends are doing. My friends are actually preventing, they're not only preventing, you know, a young woman from getting an abortion, which a lot of people are encouraging her to do, but they are preventing her from ending up as a trafficked person because she's so vulnerable and her needs are so great. And she has so many other little people now dependent on her that if somebody doesn't step in to help, if somebody doesn't step in to be her family, she's going to be a trafficked person. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, she will definitely be susceptible to the lures of traffickers. Absolutely. 100%.
Okay, so what can individual Christians and local churches do to engage on this subject? I mean, I think that we, you know, I know that's what you guys are doing at Let My People Go. You're equipping individual Christians and churches. So let's talk about that. What is the tangible stuff we can do?
Well, what I love is when we look at the early church and its explosive growth, oftentimes we don't think about the fact that the majority of those who were joining the church were vulnerable people. They were vulnerable populations, people who had been outcasted from their families, people who lacked support, and they found a family in the church. And so I would say some tangible steps that we can take as Christians in the local church is, one, identify those who are most vulnerable. Don't think you know who the most vulnerable person in your community is. But really, talk to the experts, talk to social services, talk to law enforcement, talk to local nonprofits, and ask them, who's most vulnerable to exploitation in our community? And then begin to own that in your local congregation. This is happening in our community. This is our vulnerable neighbor lying in a road. How do we care for that person? Because God has put them in our path. God has put this population in our path. And so it may be immigrants. It may be single-parent households. It could be foster children or at-risk youth. Could be those coming in and out of the prison system. How are we honoring the dignity of God in these people and really giving them the opportunity to be part of the people of God?
Hmm. All right, friends. Raleigh's giving us, he's not just giving us a list. And again, I'm talking with Raleigh Sadler. You can get some equipping resources for yourself and your church at the website for Let My People Go Network, which is LMPG Network. lmpgnetwork.org. Raleigh's not just rattling off a list of people who are our invisible neighbors most of the time. The people who are living among us. We just don't see them. So we talk about the immigrant. We talk about people who are homeless. We talk about single parents and foster kids and at-risk youth and people coming out of prison. Every single one of these individuals is an image bearer of the living God. And yet they are living in the midst of a culture and in within systems that at this point do not provide for them the kinds of opportunities that enable them to sort of make it on their own or for themselves. And so it's going to be essential that individual Christians and churches step in and actually become the household of God, actually become in tangible ways the family of faith that builds a support structure around an individual in order that they can actually, have the opportunity to do what many of us naturally had the opportunity to do because of the kinds of families and communities in which we were raised. And so, Raleigh, is that a fair way to sum up the challenge?
Absolutely.
All right, now let me ask this question.
Yeah.
Because I have a really like specific personal question. So
okay.
if I see someone who I suspect is a victim or at risk of exploitation, like what should I do?
Well, if you see someone, like say you see someone who's under the age of 18 and they are prostituting themselves, According to law, that is human trafficking. There is no such thing as a child prostitute. And so in those moments, you call 911. Or if you see maybe there's a house in your community and you're seeing cars coming in and out, or there's a construction site and you're a little worried about it because the people look tired, or there's a crew of kids who are coming and trying to sell magazines at your house, and you're looking at them and you're like, when's the last time you've eaten? You can call the human trafficking hotline, the National Human Trafficking Hotline. Its number is 1-888-37-37-888. If you dial 8s and 37s, you're going to get there at some point, but yeah. That would be the most tangible thing you could do in the moment.
Okay. So sometimes, I don't know if men have these same signs in the men's rooms as women have in women's rooms, but so like I'll be at an airport or some other mass transit kind of place, and I'm in the women's room and we actually have stalls. I don't know if men have stalls in there. I don't know what your bathrooms look like. So I'm in the women's, in a stall in the women's room, and I close the door, and what I am looking at is a sheet of paper that, basically says, I see these at rest stops as well, on the interstate, if you are being trafficked, you know, they just come right out and just use that language. And I will tell you that I have been in some of those restrooms and I have thought to myself of another person in there. Like, I just wonder, like, how appropriate or inappropriate is it for me to just say, do you need me to call someone to get you some help? Like, it's what my heart wants to do. It's what I feel compelled to do. And then it just, like, do I just seem crazy and intrusive, or should I follow my intuition and just do it?
One moment of awkwardness could actually save someone's life. That's how I would sum that up. If you have that feeling, which it really could be the Holy Spirit, and you're sitting there and thinking, oh no, I've got to do something. What do I do? I've got to have that conversation. I would say be wise in how you do it, because oftentimes those who are trafficked, they're not like a damsel in distress just waiting for a hero. Oftentimes, I mean, there's Stockholm Syndrome going on. They have been exploited. They do not trust many people. But if that door opens up, yeah, I mean, you could just start a conversation. Hey, how are you? What's your name? You know, that kind of thing, and see where that goes.
Okay, that's helpful. Hey, before we let you go, and thank you so much. This is so helpful. And again, folks, you can get resources related to this at the Let My People Go Network website, which is lmpgnetwork.org. So, Raleigh, tell us a success story. Give us, give us a picture of hope. Tell us a success story of a former victim who has been liberated.
One of our churches that partners with us is a church in Ridgewood, Queens, and they were part of our pilot project. And I'll never forget getting a call from the pastor saying, hey, something's happened. I need help. How do we connect with local law enforcement? So he and I put our heads together. He got connected to local law enforcement in Ridgewood. And you have to understand, Ridgewood is an area that's just teeming with new immigrants to the community. And this pastor, the reason he was calling me was he had identified that those really most vulnerable in the community were incoming immigrants. And as he is really tangibly loving his community by doing a coat drive, something happens. He meets a young lady. She's from Central Asia. And she spoke very little English, but she was able to tell the pastor that she was working in a little storefront, you know, about three doors down from their church. Well, that storefront was an illicit massage parlor, but the pastor didn't know that at that time. So you fast forward, and his members, his congregation, came up to him and they said, Pastor Nathan, it looks like there's a brothel on our community Facebook page. What will we do? So that was why he called me that day. Well, as he got connected to local law enforcement, something happened. Law enforcement was so energized by the fact that this community organization, this church, was coming alongside of them and saying, we want to serve you. We want to help you. We're going to show you the places where this is happening, that they took up the cause in a real way. And because of this church's involvement and their collaboration with local law enforcement, 24 illicit massage parlors have shut down in Ridgewood, Queens. There is no longer a brothel in Ridgewood, Queens. And it's all because they had their eyes open to their vulnerable neighbor.
All right, friends. Whether we like it or not, these things are taking place. Well, we don't like it. There's no chance we like it. But these things are taking place, and they're literally taking place three doors down from our church around the corner. I'm very familiar with a church in Atlanta that discovered via a CNN expose in the middle of the night on a Saturday night that the corner outside of their church was the place that that law enforcement acknowledged as like the number one human trafficking location in the country for the transfer of human beings, and they changed their the life of their church to center around the concern of what was happening, unbeknownst to them, literally under the steeple of their church. So now that ministry is called Street Grace, and it actually includes thousands of churches now. And so you literally can be changed not only in your local congregation, but you can change the experience of human beings, not only in your own community, but in many other communities, if you would simply open your eyes and willingly engage this issue. Again, the human trafficking hotline is 888-3737-888. Again, that's 888-3737-888. The website where your church can become equipped to engage on this issue is the Let My People Go website. That's lmpgnetwork.org. Raleigh, thank you so much for joining us today on The Reconnect and for what you do every day.
Thank you.
Absolutely. All right, friends. It's kind of hard to turn from that conversation to any other conversation. So I think that I'm actually going to forego my below the fold today and offer it up to you tomorrow. And I think I'm just going to settle in here for a moment and continue to have a conversation about this particular issue. My friend Scott Weimer is the pastor of a church in Atlanta, Georgia. And I remember because when he shares his testimony about this, he weeps. And we're talking, we're talking about a guy who has it together most of the time, but this issue undid him. He got a call from a church member on a Saturday night and said, "You got to turn on CNN." He turned on CNN, and what he could see in the frame was the church that he serves. It's called North Avenue Presbyterian Church. And if you want to check out Street Grace and see how another church is approaching this issue in cooperation and coordination with Christians of every variety in a particular region, Street Grace and North Avenue Presbyterian Church would certainly be resources that you could turn to. So Scott, is obviously drawn immediately into, but has some catching up to do because the CNN report is already underway. And as they are describing what is taking place on this corner where his church is located, when they are describing the trafficking of particularly young women, but also young men, and they're talking about the transfer of human capital from one human trafficking group to another in order to keep these people, keep them on the move in such a way that law enforcement can't ever sort of figure out, who's where for any period of time. And these people are being sexually trafficked for the most part. And it broke my friend Scott. It just broke him. And when he got in the pulpit of his church the next day, he's looking out at his congregation and he basically just said, "Look, we can't do this if what's going on out there is going on. We can no longer do inside the walls of this church what we're doing unless we actually figure out how to change the reality of people who are literally on the doorstep of our church and these horrible things are happening to them." And his congregation, I think by the inspiration of the Holy Spirit and because he had so much leadership equity with them, they literally were transformed in a moment. So it can happen. God can take hold of your heart and he can change not only your heart of stone to a heart of flesh on this issue, but he can then use you to change the hearts of others. And so let me encourage you to make human trafficking an issue for yourself and for your church. All right, friends, that's all we've got time for today. You can connect with me online at reconnectwithcarmen.com. Sign up for the podcast. We'd appreciate a donation to the ministry. It's crunch time for us in that area. Share today's show with someone new. Have a great day, and God bless.
The Reconnect is brought to you by the Presbyterian Lay Committee. To continue the conversation and become part of the Reconnect community, visit reconnectwithcarmen.com.